and welcome to episode 109 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me for today's step into the black hole that is the world of comics is the man who's destined to be a Doctor Who at some point in the future, Tony Esmond.
Hey, how many times have we tried to record this now? It's like the fourth time.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I've going to be putting something in afterwards, were you, for that?
Probably, yes. I think there's going to be quite a few outtakes this week. Yeah. And you lovely people out there wondering, where's Dan Butcher? Well, he had the gall to live his life and go on a lovely family holiday this week. How dare he? Obviously, he's having a lovely time without us. I don't know.
He sent us a picture of a shop he'd found, didn't he, called BJ's on the Beach.
Yep, so he's having a lovely time. Seriously, folks, you're going to hear me laugh a lot this week because we've taken about 10 minutes just trying to start this show because we keep laughing.
I've got a feeling that our guest may have muted himself for the moment.
Yes. And our guest is someone we've lined up as a suitable replacement for Dan Butcher to talk about all things comics this week. He's the creator behind The Sheep and the Wolves, which you can see more of at thesheepandthewolves.com, and it's also collected in the awesome collection Slang Pictorial. Not only that, but he's a man responsible for the art duties on Tony Esmond's Cockney Kung Fu. Isn't he, Tony?
Yeah. Calm yourself, co-creator. Tony. We're saying co-creator, aren't we?
Yeah, that's what, yeah. You're like a tag team. That's what you are.
Yeah. We'd make a brilliant fucking tag team.
All right, it's our pleasure to welcome Nick Prolix to the show. Hello, Nick.
Hello, chaps.
Yeah, I think you saying that we could be a good tag team may change the script in a few episodes of time.
Yeah, that would probably also break the internet, I think. we got a fun-filled batch of comic talk for you this week. We're just freeballing it this week, aren't we? Yeah, it's good to take it easy. And Nick's just the man to join us. And judging by the 15 minutes it took us to try and start this show, it could be quite a funny one.
Yeah.
So you build it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, whatever. As you can tell, folks, he's just as bad as us. So God knows where the show's going to go. But before we get to that, as always, this show's brought to you with help from the fine folks at Comic House. Hey. As more and more people are discovering, Comic House is the place where creators can buy and sell their comic books and also get a nice bit of change for it as well. Publishers and indie creators can list their stuff for free, and on the website you'll see all kinds of amazing indie titles there, such as Brethren Born, Midnight Man, Cadavers, Dominion, and their own anthology comic. They're all on the featured page at the moment on the website.
So check
it out. If you want to help support indie creators you might not actually be able to see at conventions, then definitely check it out. Because obviously there's conventions all over the shop and we can't always get to them all, and creators can't make them all either. Even though Nick tries very hard, despite being geographically challenged, as he told us beforehand. Check out comichouse.com. And also, recently they had a successful Kickstarter campaign for their new app, which is basically going to be Netflix for comics. Yes, you heard me right. Subscribe, and then you'll get access to their whole library of comics to read whenever and wherever you want. So
I subscribed, and I don't understand the internet. So
you don't, do
it's
you?
Worth it.
Yeah.
No, don't at all.
So is the app different than the website?
I believe so.
It's a bit like a Comixology app, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
Right.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the indie creators who are going to put their stuff on Comic House, they'll also be on the Comic House app. Sort of thing,
yeah,
and they'll get I think they get money back depending on who's read it, sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so you still get money even if like people are just reading your comics for the subscription fee, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll have to talk me through it, Vince, when we get it.
Yes.
I won't understand it.
That's all right.
I mean, I keep trying to look to see what the weather's like on the BBC, and I keep getting other things coming up on my computer.
What kind of weather are you looking for, Tony?
Well, I'm just googling BBC.
You want to be careful with that, so I recommend putting some sort of child lock on your computer.
What's BBW?
Anyway, so you know how this show's going to go, folks. If you want to know more about this brilliant app, and know if someone like Tony will be able to understand it...
You'll be all right then.
Sign up at comichouse.com/app. So there you go. Thank you very much, guys, as always.
Yeah. Yeah, you've had a busy weekend, haven't you?
Who has? Me?
You have, yeah.
Well, it wasn't a busy weekend. I left the house.
Oh, did you? You went to some sort of trendy graffiti clubbing event, didn't you, or something?
It wasn't really a clubbing event. It was
Did it have gigs and stuff, did it?
What do you mean, did it have gigs? There was live music.
There were bands playing and stuff.
Yeah, well, there was DJs and all kinds of things.
What do you mean, people just playing records?
Essentially, yes.
And what was that called? Upfest?
Upfest in Bristol. Yeah. It's not so much it's not a comic event, but there was quite a few comic loving people that were there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, really busy. It takes part in a place of... where was it in Bristol? I've forgotten now. The listeners that know it will be screaming at me. Yeah, and basically they just turn like a borough of Bristol and like the sides of buildings and they just have live graffiti happening. They'll turn the entire side of like a house into like a picture of John Lennon's face, and then the football ground. Yes, I actually went to a football ground. Oh,
nice one.
Yeah, I didn't catch on fire. That's but around it they had like loads of canvases and stuff, and it was basically just live art. And what I loved about it was so many different styles and like all different. There was an amazing Thanos that snuck up somewhere.
Oh, was there? Yeah, I've not seen a picture of that.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture of that actually.
Yeah,
you can tell there's a lot of these artists who are influenced by a lot of the things that we love as well. But you know, brilliant typography, amazing. And then as you got inside the football ground, there was like stalls and stands and like a sort of gallery. It kind of, when I was walking around, it was quite inspiring. And I kind of thought, is there an event like this that could be done like for comics? Now, I say that being someone who hasn't been to a comics event like that. I mean, there's lots of you out there, probably you, Tony, you've probably been to events like this where there's just live art and stuff going on all day.
It's not a bad shout, is it, to have a sort of live sketching area?
Yeah,
although they do that at the 2000 AD one. They had a sort of live sketching area, didn't they, because Adam Sharif from the Orbiting Pod, he was sort of moderating it.
Yeah I mean, they
do it at Cardiff as well, didn't they?
They did. But with this place, it was almost like you had all of these artists, just live art, just on the go all the time. And they had like areas where kids could just draw and just do anything, you know, draw on a wall, for instance, or like they had these big canvases. And it says a lot about the audience, because I looked at this canvas that a lot of people had just scribbled on, and no one drew a dick.
What's wrong with people?
it means that they genuinely liked and they were passionate about this stuff rather than thinking, oh, I'll draw a knob somewhere.
Yeah,
you draw it up though, wouldn't you, Tony?
Fucking definitely.
No, but it was great.
A few of our sort of listener chums were there, weren't they? Tom Curry was there. He tapped you on the shoulder and said hello, didn't he? You told me.
I was just heading off, and he passed me by and said hello. It was great. Just random who you bump into, literally on the street. It was great. And he posted up some great pictures of some sort of comic and video game style graffiti and. Yeah.
Okay.
Just awesome. I mean, I was there for like a good 4 hours or so, and I think it was only sort of the tip of the iceberg, because there was stuff going on all over.
Okay.
What I really liked about it was the atmosphere was really good and really positive. Yes, there was a lot of people talking. It did have a bit of a festival vibe about it, because people were just drinking and just chilling out. But there wasn't anyone being an arsehole. There wasn't anyone really being a wanker. Everyone was just really into the whole vibe of the whole area. And it was very
that miss next year then.
Why is that? What, because it's a good vibe, or because
it would be a good opportunity for me to be an arsehole? That's the opportunity I always grasp with both hands.
Well, you take it every week, don't you? That's the worst phrase I've probably used in a long time.
Oh god, we're going to get hate mail about that. I was trying to subtly get the double-handed wank in, and you
not the first time. Oh, set fire to the car, it's all gone wrong.
Sarah Harris,
hey,
we've had a little bit of hate mail. Yeah, I've had I personally have had quite a lot.
But have you had any that's been like pod related?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
But... I can't really call it hate mail, though, surely.
Well, I think the phrase from one of the emails was, Tony Esmond knows, talks shit, I know this because his head is up his own arse. I believe that phrase was once used in an email. That's not particularly hateful. Maybe it's just humorous. You know what I mean?
There's a fine line between hateful and factual, isn't there, really? I mean...
We'd have a phone conference about that one.
Yeah. Oh, Tony, that is the worst thing you've ever... A phone conference, did you say?
No. My God. I've become corporate.
Oh, that's one thing this show will never do, as you can tell by the first 10 minutes of this episode. Yeah. But Upfest was really great, yeah. And like you say, Tony, Sarah Harris was there.
Yep, she was there. I saw some pictures of her on Facebooks. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw her in Swindon, I said, I'll see you at Fest. And she said, I doubt it. There's going to be a lot of people there. And she was absolutely right, because I didn't see her.
She just avoided you.
Well, not the first. Anyway, yes, it was great. I didn't quite know what it was going to be going into it. And I was really, really pleasantly surprised. And I was quite inspired. And I think going out to events that stretch beyond comics as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like everything, isn't it? Travel broadens the mind. That's the poncier thing I've said in ages. But I do mean that, like look beyond comics for inspiration and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I'm surprised that Daryl Thought wasn't there, because he does quite a lot of that sort of thing, doesn't he? I know I've seen him put some of his images on a wall on Facebook within the last sort of 6 months or so. He does sort of great stuff like that, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he's that local, though. Is he?
Oh, okay. No, I'm not sure. No, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, well, I put a comment 4P, on Facebook.
He's shouting at his
his iPod or whatever he listens to. Yeah. He's the one who listens in his office, because he said everyone chuckles at us swearing. So they're probably like the double-handed wank we just talked about. That's good.
Lovely.
Yeah. Because I put on Facebook that I'd gone to Downfest, because I went to take reference. This is true, and Nick will agree with this, that I went to Soho to take some reference photographs for our project.
Photos.
Yeah. They're in our private locked folder.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. And so I jokingly put on Facebook that I went to Downfest, and then put loads of pictures up of peep shows and stuff. And then I actually took it down, because I thought, people already think I'm a bit weird. You know?
You? Weird?
I know. So that's not going to go well. People are doing that. You know, you can press that Facebook button and you get a shocked face, whatever it is.
Yeah.
People start doing that, and I thought, they don't understand that I'm not there to, you know, try out what's going on, just to take pictures. And it wasn't... I think it was a bit of something to call it Downfest. You know, whatever. But anyway, so I went from there and I met Jason Gunn, a.k.a. Jay Wilson, and his friend Carl.
Who weren't in that area. You met them.
And they were nearby. Hmm. Yeah. I met them at Orbital. And we went for a few beers. Jay, obviously, you all know, because he did a great episode, one of our favourites, talking about Surface Tension. And I talked to him a bit about his new project, which is really shaping up, really looking interesting. And he gave me a great book on 70s kung fu movies, which is just absolute gold, which I've had to stop myself going to Amazon and buying every film that, you know, mentioned
Nick,
in the book.
Nick, what has it been like working with Tony, talking about 70s martial arts films, etc.?
The serious answer.
Give us that second.
It's been an eye-opening experience. I think that's my answer on both.
It's like the man on the street on the news. Yeah, he was a nice bloke, my neighbour, but when I found out he was a murderer, it was a bit of an eye-opening experience.
He was quite a quiet fella, but... Yeah.
Well, that's not Tony.
Keeps himself to himself. No. Yeah, no, I've never done any collaboration before. So, you know, it's been... Not wanting to sort of get too love festy too early, but you know it's been
fun, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's all in the communication. I think I definitely do. Yeah. You know, there's some projects you hear about where somebody sends a script off and then 3 months later they get 20 pages of art back. But we're very much about sort of talking about each thing, aren't we? Which I quite like about that. And it has changed due to we talked about this, Vince, but the project has changed due to Nick being on it. You know, I've sort of changed certain things, and he's changed and thought of stuff that's really interesting, you know.
Do you mean like story beats or like actual scenes, or you know, has it drastically altered where the story goes?
I think probably Nick says, but I know that he can carry something off which happens later on in the story with two blonde females. I'm sure Nick knows what I'm talking about. And I know that he can carry that off where I think other artists possibly couldn't have. It's a little bit of a funny one, but I think Nick's humorous, his style is humorous enough to carry off something that sort of bleak, that sort of dark, Do you know what I'm talking about there, Nick? Or...
Yeah.
So that sort of... I wanted to go there with it, and I did in the end, because I was confident that you could carry it off, if that makes sense. You know?
Was that because you saw, like, Nick's style of, like, humour and in, like, The Sheep and the Wolves and stuff? Is that what...
Yeah, I think so. I think it can be summed up with two words, minge foo. I think is the two words I'm going to sum that up with.
Oh, my God. So, when you get a Tony Esmond script, Nick... What emotions are you feeling? Are you scared?
You've had one of my scripts. You've seen a couple of them.
I have. But this is a very different kettle of fish, Tony.
It's another one of them... what do I want to say? You know, like you hear about... I've never read any, but you hear about like Alan Moore's scripts as being like, you know, sort of like a phone book sort of novel passages where everything's kind of like nailed down and he sort of describes, you know, everything that's going to be in the panel.
And everything outside of the panel sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And that sort of level of kind of detail. Mm. The thing that struck me with Tony's script, and again, like I said, I've never read any others, so I don't know, and I'm assuming they're all like this, right? But, you know, it's very, I want to say it's discursive. It's like a conversation. You read it, and you can hear this. You want to say it's like the bloke down the pub telling you about this story.
Mm. Oh, okay. Oh, interesting. Right?
Yeah. And I mean that in the sense of, you know, like someone... Like a kind of, it reads as that kind of pub raconteur, right?
Okay. I like that. Yeah, I'll get stuff in there. Like, I'm sure you know what I mean, Nick, and stuff like that. You know.
The first draft that you sent me, which was obviously the one that was going out to other people. You know, do you know what I mean? That one.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You know, you're reading it through, and you felt like you were kind of being told this story by someone who's telling, you know, by the storyteller.
Right.
And then I'm probably not explaining this.
No, I get you completely. Yeah.
Very well. But yeah, like this, and I think that, again, that comes back to the sort of collaboration. Like there's a kind of, there's space in the script for me to take stuff and run with it.
Mm.
But the thing that I kind of like is it's nailed down enough so that I'm not having to try and make everything up.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
Visually,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, there's a skeleton, there's a framework there that I can take, and I can go with that direction, or, you know, in the thumbs and stuff, you know, it will change, it will develop, you know, it will change slightly, or, you know, I'll take it a different angle. But it's not, there's enough there to kind of work with. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I mean, have you read many other scripts from other people before?
I've got a project that I was kind of, I had to sort of say no to, or I had to sort of put back burner when this came along, with a colleague from work. And but again, that's very different because that started off as essentially a film script that was then being turned into, we decided he was going to do it as a comic and wanted me to do
right.
It.
Interesting.
And again, we might sort of, you know, he's currently doing another side project and that might, you know, but he might come back to it hopefully, you know, in a year or two down the line. Okay. But those are very different, again, like I say, very different sort of beasts, if you like, you know, say, the thing
have you coming... Have you ever written a script for someone else, Nick? I'm not sure if I know this.
I haven't written a script for me.
I was going to ask you how.
That's
going
to be my next question, yeah.
Yeah. How do you, like, write for yourself?
But badly. I have this idea that, like, you know, if it's a good idea, it will stay in my head.
Right.
And if I forget it, it can't have been that good.
Oh, you've obviously got a better memory than me. Yeah, I can't remember anything for more than 5 minutes.
I've got a terrible memory. I've got a terrible memory and a terrible memory for names. Great with faces, but anyway. So like, I'll start writing something, and then realise that I can't, you know, that the story's changed because I've actually got to do something else because I had a different idea, you know, beforehand, and, you know, I have to sort of go back and kind of rejig the odd bit here and there in the sheep and the wolves because I've kind of worked myself. I've gone off on in one direction and forgotten where I was trying to kind of get it to. And I should do that kind of, you know, like the sort of psycho wall on, you know.
Yes, yeah, with all the bits of string and.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
and I haven't done that. And, you know, kind of, okay. Sort of big picture. And I was looking up the, I'm going to forget his name now, it was a is it a DC?
DC Fontana or?
No, it was like a DC editor, I think.
Oh, sorry, DC Comics. Okay.
Who was talking about kind of like these like story grids, and he kind of had this big kind of it was on Twitter last week, but anyway, this shit radio.
They already know that, Nick. Bloody hell.
Yeah, they know that. Yeah.
But you know, you'd have like this sort of four. You'd have your subplot A, B, C, and D.
Plot. Oh yes, I know what you mean. Yeah, I know Claremont was a big fan of this, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a big grid. You can sort of, you know, in issue one, you know, your, you know, plot strand. This plot strand will be, you know, strand A. That'll have prominence, and then you'll have these three subplots. And then in issue two, that first story will kind of, you know, play out, and then the next, this other strand will come to.
But you'll drop bits of
exactly
in and all this sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah, I know that. I read something about Claremont. I think it might have been an interview with him talking about this, where he would drop something in. But I think with Claremont, he'd drop something in, and then he'd find out you'd find out about it 2 years down the road.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And
I, you know, and I like that sort of. You know, I'm a massive fan of that sort of storytelling.
Mm.
You know, that has that feel of, you know, you're putting in the Easter eggs early on.
Yeah. Mm. I do love the callback as well. I think the callback gets used and not enough. I read something, I hope he doesn't mind, Ken Reynolds sent me something through this week, in fact today, and I read it and I loved it, and it had almost a callback from page one onto the last page, and it just made me chuckle that this, it's only like a phrase that he used, but it helps gel the whole story together, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And but I think, I don't know, like sort of saying it now, like, you know, you'd be sort of impressed with that kind of, you know, the sort of Alan Moore, again, sort of, you know, sort of the Moore model where, you know, everything feels meticulously plotted out.
Yeah.
And, you know, so everything is going to be a call back to something, or it's going to be foreshadowing something that's coming forward. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it feels like all of that. And you feel like, you know, he does all of that in the writing. Mm. Yeah. And there's, you know, what's the, you know, the idea, like in film, like Hitchcock, you know, this idea that Hitchcock had the film edited in his head.
Yeah.
Yes.
So so in the process of doing it, he was just merely kind of like, you know, not merely, but you know what I mean. Like he was creating the vision that he'd already.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. I think that's what we do in comics, though. That a comic story, when you write it down or you read it, is the edited version of a continuous image, isn't it? Of almost like a, you know, a moving image.
Yeah.
And we're editing it. We're editing that story into the relevant panels that lead it into a flow, you know?
Yeah. What's the best way to plot it out, though? I mean, I say this as someone, like, I've got a couple of stories that I'm writing at the moment. And, you know, when your head is just so full of ideas and you're just writing them down, their bullet points in their notebook and stuff like that. When you have, do you do yourself like a timeline? You know, just one long line, and then you start putting in those bullet points and those stories and those story points and stuff into order then, you know.
I've plot mine in 5-page sections.
Yeah.
So I know this is happening in the first 5 pages, this in the second 5 pages.
Yeah.
And then I plot out to whatever the issue or the length of the story will be.
Mm-hmm.
And then I split it into pages. All right, I want this is going to have to happen. this is going to have to happen. And then you have to have a beginning and an end to a page as well, don't you?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, certainly...
It's like breaking it into fractions.
Yeah, like say, with the anthology stuff, Murder Road, because that's four chapters, you know, yep. I know what the, you know the almost the cliffhanger of each chapter is.
Yes.
I know yep. where it's going to go at that point. I don't necessarily know all the little bits that are going in before it. I've got, like, you know, lots of bullet points and, you know, these strands and that strand.
Raises and stuff yeah. like that I like to save up, you know, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. But how do you physically, like, you know, even though a lot of it's in my head, in some ways I think I need to see some sort of...
I need to write it down.
I need a visible sort of, like, timeline of what's going to happen. What's a good way to do that?
I write it in a notebook. It's the only way I can do it. I have to write. I'm not
so
happy.
Once you've got all your notes and stuff, you get a separate notebook and then just write it from beginning, middle, end.
I only use one continuous notebook and I just, you know, keep going. But I'll almost draw a grid out and say, and this will be page one and this will be broken down into these points. And I'll write it. And I'm not happy. And I'm actually a little bit on edge until I get it on paper because I'm so shit at remembering stuff.
I
have to actually, I literally have to write it down as soon as I think. And then when I've got that grid sort of sorted out, I hate to call it a grid because it makes it sound so sort of perfunctory. Do you know what I mean? But until I've got it all sort of divided out into story beats, then I'm happy. Then I know that it's more of a workman-like thing to sit there and type it out. Mm-hmm. And then I can play about with dialogue and I can play about with phrases for how I describe stuff and angles and stuff like that, you know. I do the odd camera angle, but not every time, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for that sort of visible stuff, I like to let the story sort of breathe and be whatever it needs to be. Have you ever had you've scribbled down something about a character, like a character name and a couple of lines about what that character is, and you haven't thought about it, and then a month later you look at that notebook and you're like, oh, and you see it almost fresh, like, how did I come up with that? That's quite good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly what I do. And that's why I don't get, I'm not saying I'm big and I'm brilliant, but that's why I don't get writer's block, because I have loads of notes.
Yeah.
You know, I can just flip back. I actually have pages in this notebook that say things like new project or mailer.
I can hear you flicking through it, Tony.
Yeah. Mm. And that's, I have like little, just bullet points. I'll read one out here. What's this say? Muppet Boner. See, that's what I've written in this book.
Yeah, we've all written that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, so that'll make it into a story.
For the next five pages of that notebook, he's drawn it. That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah. The grouch.
Do you do a similar thing, Nick? Do you like have notebooks and stuff, or is it
literally? Obviously, I'm like, you know, the I'm addicted to, you know, stationary porn.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Or porn, or mobile porn, whatever. I don't know. But, you know, and that's why I'm like kind of like amazed at the idea, or just the discipline of having one notebook, because like, I write stuff down on any random piece of paper or in a one notebook, and then I'll forget where I've put it, so I'll write the next bit of notes for something in another one, and it all just ends up just this sort of, you know, bits all over the place. And I know when I got the script for Cockney Kung Fu, I went out and, you know, as is my one, you know, I went out and bought a new sketchbook for that project to do stuff in. And part of that was because I wanted to keep stuff because I was thinking about, you know, sort of back matter, you know, like keep sketches so that, you know, we could have them.
We've got some great stuff. Yeah, we can't wait for people to see when we collect it all together. There's some. We talked quite a long, because I think you purposely took a long time, not a long time, but you purposely took a period of time to sketch out ideas and come up with what people look like and stuff like that, didn't you? It's fair to say.
Because it's a different. It's kind of different to the way that I've worked on other projects, which have been
right.
I don't want to say organic in the sense of you know, this is, you know, less than that, but like, you know, things will develop as they would, you know, through the process of making, you know, a webcomic or whatever. Whereas this felt like I didn't want to do the thing where, you know, it's like six, you've got five page chunk for issue one.
Yeah.
she's got to look the same on page one as she looks on page five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, those are sort of areas that I'm kind of, you know, staying on model is a skill that, you know, I'm not necessarily, you know, naturally possess, you know. So it's,
I mean, there's a lot of very, there's a lot of big company artists who could do with a bit of advice around that as well recently. I mean, from some comics you and I have talked about, Vince, yeah, you know.
I very rarely do character sheets. I love, you know.
Right, okay.
I love to do more of them, but I very rarely do them. And I think
I've just started doing them on the last, and that's because for you know, because I, you know, I've got, sorry to I cut you off.
No,
you carry on.
Because partly I think it's well, A, it was kind of like, you know, because I know obviously if you've read the mailer, dear listener. You will know that, you know, there's that Tony had a very clear role model, you know, in mind.
Yes.
For,
yeah. For, I think we can say it was Carolyn Monroe. It was,
yeah.
It was,
you know, burned onto the retina of teenage Tony.
My DVD of the Golden Voyage of Sinbad.
Just what do you call it? Just like.
Just, you know, warped
lines on the screen.
Yeah. It's like when that woman comes out of the cake in Under Siege. I remember renting that video and thinking, that's been paused three times. Yeah.
And, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. And yes, yeah, so, you know, trying to keep with, because I've got, I do a bit and then I'm going to go off and draw something else, like another project.
Yeah,
and come back, I've got to remember how to draw her again, and I haven't got time to learn how to draw her again from scratch. And do you know what I mean? Like, so if I can build the character model up at the start and actually try and nail down a few principles, as because that's what I love about those, you know, you look at the sort of Disney model sheets,
yeah,
you know, there'd be like the little instructions, you know, to do with, you know, there's some tiny little things like, you know, like the shape of the you know, the eyelid, or, you know, the angle, you know, the hair has to reach a point, but, you know, it's never, it'll be tiny little details for each element, not necessarily, you know, every tiny thing pinned down, but, you know, like just these key kind of visual cues that that define the character's look.
Yeah.
And so I think it was like important to try and nail down that stuff early on. One thing I wanted to just made me thinking when you're talking about kind of having a bad memory and wanting to, like, that joy of like finding a note that you've written, and, you know, almost kind of like, you know, that rediscovering that.
Yeah.
It turns out I'm quite funny, you know, that moment. That all, must have been thinking about this, you know, this is a good idea. And again, this is one of those things where, like, you know, it's one of the things about being a teacher, you know, you give a lot of advice but you never follow any of it. I listened to a podcast once, and the person on that was talking about a thing what they do is where they'll come up with an idea. So, and I know Dan said this. Dan sort of said, you know, he'll, I think he says he emails himself.
Yes. Yeah, he does. Yeah.
You know, he'll do a little message and he'll sort of send that to himself on his phone or something. I think but what this, I think it was like a sort of productivity guru type fella sort of said was, he writes, you know, he'll come up with an idea, he'll write an email, he'll email it to himself. But what he does is he schedules the email for 10 days time,
and okay,
then, and he just puts it in the, you know, it just sits there in his outbox waiting for 10 days, and then it, you know, automatically.
God, but we're going down a really dangerous road here where we're actually pre-programming our memories, aren't we? That's it. We're getting plugged into the machine, aren't we? This is slowly changing us.
So this is, you know, it's exactly that. So, you know, you'll be sitting at his desk, you know, at work or something, and then suddenly, you know, being, you know, you have mail, and it's, you know, Nick, you have a mail from Nick, and Nick's telling you, you know, I've come up with this great idea, Muppet Boner, right? And it's like, And the idea is, like, if you look at it and 10 days later, you go, Muppet Boner, genius. Yeah. Right? Or you go,
I don't
like,
think anyone said that.
Yeah, call the police, I think they're saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so it's either that, or you look at it and you go, what was a, you know, idiot, you know, delete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you build in that kind of, that time for the idea to sort of go away and then come back, and then you become like the your own editor, you know what I mean? Like, you're the person, you become your own fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah, and that's
that is really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly works sometimes, like when you got several different stories in your head and you're just jotting down things. You know, I've got notebooks with loads of ideas for stories that I look at now and just be like, what was I thinking? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that never work. Or, you know, I clearly just thought of the first paragraph and, like, that was it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas the good ones stick. The good ones linger in your mind, don't they?
I like to think so. Mm. I like to think we're judges of good things. We're at least judges of things that we think are good.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And I'm not saying commercial, because a lot of the time I don't give a fuck. Because things that people think are commercial often are just failures, aren't they? You know, you can't aim for that. But I think so. I think you're right, dude. Yeah, I hope so anyway. Yeah, well, we'll soon see, won't we?
Yeah. Now, there's something that you two have been using for Cockney Kung Fu that we haven't really spoken much about on the show. And you've used something called Trello. Is that right?
Yeah, Nick introduced me to it. I'm a big fan of it now. Yeah, did you want to explain it, Nick? Because you explain it much better than me.
So Trello's just a website where you can collaborate with other people, and what it allows you to do is I think it's called Kanban. Basically, it's this started out as, which one is it? Is it Blue Collar, where the Japanese firm come to Detroit and buy the car company? And
oh yeah.
Is it Michael
Keaton's in it? Yeah, Michael Keaton's in it.
Oh God, yeah.
But it's so again, it's one of these sort of productivity tools where I think they so the idea is, you know, you have three columns. You have a kind of, you know, to do jobs that need to do. So you'd list all in one column all of the jobs that need doing, and then you've got a middle column which is like, you know, what's being done.
Yeah.
So that shows you, so you can look at that and see, you know, what, you know, this team are working on that, so and so's doing this, and, you know, and then you've got a third column which is, you know, what's been done, and you're constant. So, you know, the idea is, at a glance, you can see the whole project.
Mm. It's really, I think it's almost like having a mutual pin board in front of you, isn't it?
With how does that work for story then, in terms of story?
We put scripts on there, pages appear. So we've got like a pencil, we got a script line, you got a if you've got a big enough screen on your computer, you can see it all at once, which is really good. And you've got a line of like all the scripts, and then you almost like ticked off when Nick's read them and I've read them, and then we've got a page of pencils, and then we can both agree on that, and then a page of inks, then a page of finished art, you know.
So you
like
break
that.
It down by like one script
by
page.
Column. Yeah. Yeah. But it's all visible at once on a sort of big screen in front of you. You can see it all, and there's a little sort of list of things to do. Oh, we've got to contact this thing, or have you thought about this? And you know, I think it's really good. Yeah, but I'm a big fan of it now. So I think I've suggested it's something we should be doing as well.
Yeah, so it's handy for collaboration in general, then, you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a productivity. You know, Trello, you know, game designers use it a lot. You know, any sort of small team, it's a business tool, isn't it? You know, it's a professional package that you can subscribe. You can pay more money and you get more features and whatnot.
Essentially
what it is a virtual cork board, and you know, you create what are essentially index cards, and on those cards you can put anything you want, and you can create columns, and those could be anything that you want at all, you know. So you could, so again, it's a sort of use this with students, try and get them to when they're working on their projects together to use Trello, A, to communicate, and B, so they can track what needs to get done, you know, so they can be hitting whatever milestones they need to, you know, on the projects that they're doing. I mean, in terms of how we, like Tony says, how we're using it is very much the idea that each page of the comic exists as a card.
Yeah. And,
you know, those pages will be in different columns depending on what state they're at. So, you know, they start off in the script column, then they move into, once I've turned them into thumbs, they move into the thumb column. When I've penciled them, they go into the pencils column, inked, colours, you know, all the way till you get to. So the idea is you start with everything on the left hand of the screen, and by the end of the project, we'll have moved everything over to the right.
Interesting. I recommend it to people listening. Yeah. I think it's a good idea, especially if you're collaborating. Because, I mean, Dropbox is great, isn't it? And we use Dropbox all the time, but there's only so much you can do. You've got to load it up, you know, download it and look, and then return it. And but this is just sort of pings up on the screen in front of you all on its own. So,
I first heard it because Sean Dober used it for Descending Outlands.
Oh, cool. Right, yeah.
Yeah, he does, because he works with artists on that, so that helps him with that. But I'd never really, you know, even though I looked at it and thought, oh, that's cool. It's good to know.
Yeah, they are prone to sending you quite a lot of emails. It's one of those ones.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But we're used to that, aren't we? We've got Twitter and Facebook, haven't we? So we're used to that.
Yeah.
99% of emails you get are rubbish, aren't they? Yeah. It's only the 1% you actually have to read.
Speaking of Twitter, should we have a cheeky little question for Nick?
Oh, go on then.
Tom Curry, who we've obviously mentioned at this Chugglehead, he wants to know, what was the inspiration for The Sheep and the Wolves?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you want to say a little bit about what it is? Or?
Yeah, please do. Yeah. We'd love to. Yeah, we're big fans of it, mate. You know we like it, yeah.
Cheers. Thank you. So The Sheep and the Wolves, I sort of pitch it to folks at tables now as kind of like, well, it depends how old they are. If they're of a certain age, I say it's like Minder, but set in the 60s. And if they look like they won't know Minder, what Minder was, or walk on yeah. There's nothing for you on this table, go on. Look with your eyes, not with your hands. That's what I say to them.
Sing the theme tune.
Or if they're a bit younger, you know, I sort of say, you know, it's Only Fools and Horses, but with more immigrants. That's why. Where are you going? Come back. No, seriously, you like it. Yeah. Have a look.
Or if it's a Guardian reader. I didn't say that.
Yeah, so essentially it's my sort of 1960s set North London soap opera, really.
Right.
Started off with sort of aspirations to a more sort of crime story. I like to think of as like sort of crime adjacent stories. So it's characters who sort of think that they're a little bit handy, or think that they, you know, want to be a face but aren't. And it's kind of like what happens when you start to sort of believe the sort of bullshit. It's kind of like, you know, Billy Liar. If Billy Liar thought, you know, he was I don't know, you know, one of the Krays or something like that.
Because whereabouts in London have you based it? I know some bits in a movie studio, which is my favourite. One of my favourite bits is the sort of filming a movie thing.
Yeah.
Where is that, like Elstree or something like that? I can't remember.
So it's set in essentially a fictional North London borough or sort of little neighbourhood called Bouveret Town, which... if you know your North London, you know, you might be able to sort of work out, you know, what that's kind of referring to. But essentially, it's an amalgam of, you know, all the bits of kind of various bits of North London that I sort of grew up, you know, or where my family kind of had... spent time at various points, you know, from the sort of 50s till the sort of 2000s. All kind of like hodgepodge together. So, you know, the what's interesting is some people pick it up, and like on issue one on the front cover, there's a sort of a fake bit of A to Z And so some people have picked up and sort of gone, oh, yeah, I think I recognise this. I know where this is. It's sort of, right, nice one. So it's kind of... I've lost where I was going.
Just kind of, is it? It's kind of a faked history. Is it kind of? Did he come at it that way? You know.
Let's sort of going all the way back. Like, so it's been two years ago, almost 2 years sort of to the day. Like it was sort of summer 2015.
Yeah.
I sort of decided I'm gonna do comics again. You know, it'd always been something that I kind of. I thought I was going to, I kept putting off doing, I thought I'm going to do comics, and I started drawing some stuff. And then after like a sort of couple of weeks, you know, in the sort of long summer holiday, I was like, you know, people don't need another, you know, sad middle-aged man.
don't say that.
If, you know, where's my life? All the wrong turnings of my life. Kind of comic. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't need, my voice does not need to be added to that. You know, there's, that is being served. That that demographic and that type of narrative is being very well catered to. And you know, people have done stuff in that space a hell of a lot better. And it kind of became like, well, you know, what's the stories that I want to tell? And essentially it was stories about stories that I grew up hearing, you know, sort of my family coming over to England, you know, sort of being in England in the sort of 60s and, you know, what that was like. And
where are your family from? Interest, Nick?
Cyprus. So I'm
Cyprus. Oh, okay. Yes,
I'm,
right. So,
you know, I'm
Greek Cypriot. Yeah.
North London, Greek Cypriot. Right.
Real.
You know, that's just, you know, and so we grew up. You know, I mean, I remember coming home once. My dad. We're sitting down. We're watching. we're watching Shirley Valentine. half hour, 3 minutes in, you know, Tom Conti's doing his, you know, hello, lady, how are you? You know, come and let me give you a taste of my shish kebab, you know, whatever he's lying. You know.
who is almost also famously Scottish.
Yeah. My dad sort of turns to me and he's like, you know, he's not Greek, is he? And I'm like, no, dad, he's not. You know, we were like sort of that thing where, you know, as a kind of, I can't remember what the term is. I think we, you know, a kind of invisible minority.
Right, I get you.
You know, like if there was a Greek bloke on the telly, you know, the whole house went mental. Like,
really?
You know,
okay.
On the telly, everyone would run down. You know, what is it? You know, I remember. You know, there's one episode of EastEnders where, for some unknown reason, I can't remember. Grant and Phil decide to go up west and demand menaces, money with menaces off a restaurant, and it's like a Greek calf, and they go in there, and we're just like, there's a Greek calf on the telly, like, you know, like Stavros was like a fucking saint in our house.
Forget Stavros, don't they? That was a pretty terrible stereotype in back in the day, wasn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah. And also, everyone who's Greek on television has to be called the Greek. So it'd be Nick the Greek, Vince the Greek, wouldn't it? So they have to have that as a sort of second name almost, didn't they?
Yeah. So it's kind of all that sort of. I was thinking, well, actually, you know, I can do all this in a comic. I can tell these stories and I can sort of play around in that sort of sandbox and sort of do stuff in it with it. That's kind of do stuff in the sandbox. Sounds like do a dirty in the corner. actually, it's probably what if my mum ever read the comic, that's what she thinks. You know. So it was the idea was doing that, and then I kind of thought, well, I haven't got a story. Like I've got all these kind of like anecdotes, and I don't want to talk. You know, I think, you know, I really agree with what you said in can't remember if it's the mailer that's going out this week. Plug there, folks. tinyletter.com/cockneykungfu.
Yes.
You know, where you sort of say that, you know, comics is a delivery system for telling stories.
Yeah, I think it's last week's actually. Yeah, people can go and read it now. Yeah,
and what I didn't want to do is that sort of kind. There's nothing wrong with this kind of comic, you know. I have that sort of voice that makes everything I say sound like I'm either taking the piss or
you're in the club.
Done his shit. Yeah. Which. You know, has made a few students, upset over the years, but never mind. career makes you stronger, isn't it? suck it up, you know, that's what I say to my. I don't care if you're only four, that's what I say to my daughters, anyway. Never mind. It's the idea that, that sort of comic where everything's in narration. You know, every panel is, a box out of, you know, and then this happened, and then there's an image that's either, either a counterpoint or, I wanted it to be, and I know people some people, I think, you know, sort of disparage this kind of, you know, I wanted it to be, two people in a room talking.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. So so sort of going all the way back to Tom's question, I didn't have a kind of hook to build, to hang these stories off. My dad, my dad has a lot of stories, you know, and he's that sort of, he's of that sort of generation and that sort of bloke where, you know, he can sit and talk what's the phrase, talk the back legs off a donkey, telling you this stuff, and it's great, but I wasn't gonna sit there and sort of do a kind of, this isn't Mouse, this isn't like Art Spiegelman, and his dad,
okay,
trying to, and then him narrating the process by which he's having these conversations with his dad about Auschwitz and then turning that into a comic, that not willing to I'm going to put my comic up next to Mouse as a so I needed like a story, and so the sheep and the wolves is very loosely based on a 60s early 60s 1961 crime novel called The Sheep and the Wolves.
Yes.
Kind of forgotten hand paperback, it's out of print, and it's great. Well, it's got Richard Burnett, who did, I think it's Richard Burnett, George Burnett, sorry, George, who did a one called The Finsbury Lot about hijacking lorries of cigarettes, which may or may not find its way into issue 3 of Slang Pictorial. Comment. And I was like, so I had this like, there was a story, a narrative there that I could nick as a skeleton to hang the rest of this stuff on. So, this essentially, that novel is about this kid who's like an enforcer for this Soho bookie, and he gets into various kind of problems when he tries to, when he gets kind of get caught with his hand in the till, sort of, and what happens when you're robbing from a dodgy bookie,
right?
So I took that, and then I sort of transposed it. So instead of this guy being an enforcer for a West End Soho gangster, he's an enforcer for this North London this fat North London cafe, proprietor who's also a bit of a sort of slum landlord, and it kind of just, it became a kind of, I had these little sort of, going back to what Vince said about sort of plot points, had these beats that I could hit in an issue where I'm going to move the story along here, but along the way, we're going to have, we're going to take, four pages to show, some women working in a dress factory.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's, I think
that's to me what it's about. character, isn't it? It really is. And yeah. the characters you've got are not only the people in it, and I think you do a short interlude with the young members of the cast, don't you, as well? Is it called The Young Sheep and the Wolves? You know, I know you did it.
Oh, the little wolves. It was like, yeah.
Wolves, that's it.
Yeah. When they're...
Because that area of the London that you set it in, I know it's slightly imaginary, but is as much a character for the story as the people in it as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, it's a love letter to it's a love letter to the sort of London that probably never really existed.
You know, okay.
It's like London as it was kind of imagined through TV, film.
Yeah.
That's the filter through which I kind of look at stuff. And so part of it was because, you know, I'm not there anymore, and I, you know, I can't be fucked to get on the train every, you know, even like Google Maps, you know, and Google Earth, and like, you know, I do quite a lot of, you know, sort of finding landmarks and, you know, types of buildings I remember, and then using them as models for something else. But a lot of it is about this kind of imaginary landscape and sort of creating a give yourself permission to make stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not being sort of slave to, you know, what it was, you know, really like. You know, I feel like, you know, it is a more realistic depiction of London at that time because I've actually got foreign people in it, you know.
It's weird, isn't it? I was sat in I go to a coffee shop and write in the mornings before I go to work, and I was sitting there and somebody walked in, a colleague from work, and he went, "Why have you got a picture of a kebab shop on your computer?" And I thought, well, I could take an hour to explain that, you know, I'm looking up kebab shops from the Old Kent Road. Or I could just say, "Oh, I don't know, really, mate. I was just looking at kebab." You know, I just left it there, whatever. You know what I mean? Do you know what? As much as it is a good thing to research for a story, it's also quite fun. And I think looking back on the sort of nostalgia, like you say, on the buildings will be referenced to other buildings, it does give you a good grasp of the sort of vibe you need for a story, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, because you're immersing yourself in that world, aren't you? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
So I don't know if that answers...
I think that more than answers the question. Another question here. It's a process question that I'm quite interested in. From Sam Webster at SJ Webster Art. He said, "Nick, you hand letter. Just what manner of crazy bastard are you?"
I'll do the whole thing by hand. I'm an idiot.
We're going to talk more about lettering very soon. I can tell, but like, hand lettering, that's just another level for me. I can't fathom it, because I also know how bad my handwriting is.
I remember I had a report from school. I remember this to this day, my primary school report, and it said Nick's handwriting is atrocious, and I think he was trying to be nice, and he said his brain works too fast for his hand to keep up. Right, which
that's so definitely an artist.
The reason I hand letter, and the same with all of it, like hand draw it, hand you know, we can talk about process, you know, till the cows come home, it's because I'm shit at it, and I'm not going to get any better at yeah. I'm shit at all of it.
Right, like, now let me stop. Me stop you there. Right, rarely do I say this to a guest, but you, my friend, are talking out of your arse. You are very, like, seeing the lettering, certainly with sound effects and stuff, especially on Cockney Kung Fu, that's amazing stuff. Don't put yourself down.
Enough about me, you know. What do you think about me? I'm my favourite subject, mate. You know, I'd love, you know, I'll take any compliment I can get. But, you know, the reason why the lettering on Cockney Kung Fu, you know, I think like you said, you know, thank you very much. Stands up is because you look at the lettering on the first few pages of Slang Pictorial, Sheep and the Wolves, and it's dog shit. You know, and I'm not putting down my work. It's I worked out early on that if I waited till I was good, if you wait till you're good enough, you're never going to do anything.
You're
50. I'm 42, and I should have been doing this. Like, you know, I think there's a lot of talk on the Facebook group today about kind of artists or creators and being able to make a living from doing comics, and in some ways it's a young person's game, when you're older and you've got mortgage, kids, etc., it's harder, so there's this kind of idea that I sort of look back and I sort of think I'm doing stuff now, I'm doing a mini comic now. I had that idea when I was 19, I'll do comics. It's like everything, I left it.
Yeah.
And so the reason why I hand letter, and again, the reason why I ink by hand, draw by hand, is because I'm not good enough at those things to do those things.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the only way you're going to get better at doing those things
is by doing them.
Yeah. And so, I'm a big sort of believer of make your mistakes in public. I'm sort of very happy to sort of put stuff out and go, it is what it is. It's a sort of document of my artistic journey. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like the answer is, I could, and I'm, the sort of false modesty, I can do, part of my job is teaching kids how to use Illustrator.
Yeah.
Adobe Illustrator. And I love Illustrator. It's my, and the reason why I love it is because you can make beautiful, beautiful lines in Illustrator.
Yeah.
I think like a lot of people, I remember sort of early on, sort of falling in love with, sort of Charles Burns's line,
Yes. Yeah, we've talked about him actually. I actually genuinely think some of your work on our thing is comparable, dude. So some of the inks you're using on that, especially the sort of the razored line on some of the inking, when you almost like colouring in, we're using ink, I think looks like.
Cheers. But it's kind of like, I look at, the stuff that I was, and Dan Clowes as well, you sort of look at his, and you just sort of think, and I'm like, when I started with trying to use a brush, is it James Corcoran does, is that Alex Automatic, the artist on?
Oh right, yes, yeah.
Okay, his Instagram's amazing. He shows lots of the stuff that he was doing with, does with like a Winsor Newton, sable brush, And I've spent how much on fancy brushes, one arsehole from Amazon. Thank you very much. If it doesn't fit through the letterbox, don't bend it because you break the brush. But anyway.
You're not bitter.
Amazon Prime. What's the point? Anyway, but Illustrator fixes your line for you. I've got like the jittery hand of like an alcoholic. I'm not, but it might as well. It's like the little and being able to, to create that kind of precise. Smooth, that really kind of silky line, it's just like a sort of, it's just like something I sort of dream about. You sort of do the thing where like, you're trying all these different pens, you're trying all the different brushes, how are you going to do it? And you realize, the only way you're going to get, it's not the pen, it's your bloody hand. You know what I mean? It's like wrist. Okay, it's how you know, it's just practice. And so, you know, if you look at the issue one, page one of the Slam Pictorial, and you look at the last page in that comic, the art's massively different. You know, come on, leaps and bounds. And that's just because, you know, it's 20 weeks of drawing those characters, you know, and trying to do a process that kind of works. And like and I thought, and I've seen it, you know, I see it at cons, you know, some people pick up issue one, I'll have a look through, and I look at the art, you know, this sort of thing, you can sort of see him sort of think, you know, it's a bit, a bit lo-fi, it's a little bit, you know, let's call it alt comics with an X, right? You know, and you kind of want to sort of
best kind of comics,
stick with it, mate, you know, don't worry about it, you know, it gets better, you know, but I actually think, you know, I think the story's cracking from page one, you know, and I think the art catches up, you know, before you get to the end of the issue one, so, you know, I think, you know, it's
brilliant. I think it's excellent. And one of my favourites, I think, is in issue two, is the one I mentioned earlier, the filming, where they're filming the movie. That's brilliant stuff. That's like Coen Brothers on paper to me. That's how I feel about that page. Yeah, I think it's really gorgeous stuff. Yeah.
No, thank you. And again, you know, something like Fargo, the TV show, I think is a big something that I'm kind of looking at a lot.
That's so strange you say that, because I just started watching that today.
See, which one?
Well, the first series.
I'm watching it from the beginning. I haven't watched it yet. So,
season two is amazing.
Season two is fucking crazy.
Yeah,
and it's good for it. There's one moment in season two, I won't ruin it, you'll go, what happened?
Yeah. Season three's great. Season one,
I haven't seen season three yet. I missed it starting on TV, so I need to go back and catch up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, it's that, what I love about that is the way it jumps. So it sort of temporal jumps, you know, you'll have a character. So in season three, you see a character from season one turns back up. And in season two, you meet these characters when they were kids, you know, you don't realize it until later on. And there's these little things. And, you know, again, sort of bringing it back to me, it's, you know, like, I kind of know the sheep and the wolves. You know, I know where these characters end up, like, you know, sort of in terms of, I know sort of 60 years of their sort of history in my head, kind of thing, you know. So,
that's interesting, yeah.
You know, at some point, you know, there'll be stories that are ostensibly, you know, in the 70s or, you know, in the 90s, and they'll echo things that happened earlier on, you know, and characters, you know, the little wolves that you mentioned, you know, that's kind of like, you know, a sort of, it's those characters but 20 years earlier, you know, at the end of the war and stuff. And so you know, I think but in terms of the process stuff, like, yeah, literally it's about I do the stuff that I force myself to do, the stuff that I would otherwise be just doing on a computer, which is absolutely, you know, I'm not, you know, yes, you know, if I had a Cintiq, fuck it, I would be on that all the time. And you don't, you know, I'm not an idiot, you know. I'm just skin, right? You know, the choice of kind of the process of doing of stuff for me is part of why I'm doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I get you.
Yeah.
And there is something to be said for having, I mean, I've got some frame pages here, and I know there's some artists out there, I absolutely, you know, love their work. And I'm always going on at Lamming for this, because he draws all his digitally now, so I'll never get an original page from him, you know, of new stuff. And I'm looking at pages now, you know, by artists I love, and I've got the lettering is glued on.
The
word balloons are glued onto it. And I'm thinking I've got almost, apart from the colouring, I've got almost the whole process on that piece of framed art, you know. And there's a lot to be said for having that inky beauty at your fingertips, isn't there, you know?
Inky beauty.
Get that.
I mean, that, you know, there's a sort of Darwin Cook quote where he's talking about the Parker and like working it out on the page, doing the work on the boards themselves. Yeah. And that being like the kind of where you, you know, obviously he had, you know, this amazingly sort of fluid style, particularly on them books. But I know that, again, sort of going back to this thing of kind of like, how do you make kind of comics work for you sort of thing? Like,
yeah,
I know that the pages, you know, I trudge these big A3 binders with the originals, the pencils and the inks for each of my pages, and I have them on the table, and you know, people always stop and have a look through them because it's like, you know, they like to see the process, and we have a chat about, you know, how you did it, and
and you've started selling them as well, haven't you? I know.
I've sold one page. But I'm, you know, immensely grateful
I've got to tell you, that's a bargain as well. I'm not saying the price is out loud, but your pages are a steal, dude. I've got to tell you, for something that is so detailed, you know, it's so good looking. I think it's definitely a steal. Yeah,
it's like trying to work out ways you can make every page, like do the work once and get it, and you know, get paid for it as many times as you can. You know, eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. It's not happening. You know, but
yeah. When we get the movie rights, dude. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There we go. You heard it here first. Right. I got another question, which is very important. It's very of the time. It's very of the moment.
Oh, here we go.
Now, it comes from our mate Susie Gander.
Oh, I've seen this one.
Now, she's asked the basic question, but I think I'm going to reword it, if you don't mind, Susie. Nick.
Hello.
Have you ever bought or seen a cheese and onion quiche?
Yeah, I've bought a cheese and onion quiche. I've seen one. I've baked one.
This is outright fucking bullying.
Wonderful. Right. Have you ever bought or seen a cheese and onion flan?
What?
Right.
In your face.
I'm not having it. I was going to do her book as a recommend in a minute. Right.
No, she just wanted to know if Nick thought they were called quiches or flans, seeing as Mr. Esmond seems to think that quiches are flans.
Listen, south of the river, I'm going to say flan. You know what I mean? We have a north river, south river animosity, don't we, Nick? I was born West London, but most of my working and living life has been South London.
You know what? I can feel a poll coming on.
Well, say before I say it again, if God had wanted to go South London, you wouldn't have put a river in the way.
Exactly. I'm not saying it's nice south of the river. I've never said that. In fact, a bit of a plug, tinymail.com/.
How many times has that been plugged?
There's quite a long essay on a particularly disgustingly horrible part of South London in this week's mailer. So there you go.
The mailer's always really well written, though, I must say that, James.
Thanks, mate.
Very good. Yeah.
We've got a little bit of a change this week. I'm looking forward to everyone to see what they think of it. But and it goes back to what you were saying a minute ago, Nick, about fleshing out everything, you know, and having that little world, you know, sort of created. And that's what we're kind of doing with our thing, aren't we? I mean, a lot of the story that appears in this week's mailer actually relates to someone who appears at the start and the end of Cockney Kung Fu. Or their son, rather. So we're sort of fleshing it out a little bit. Interesting. It's just a little bit of an experiment. See what people think. You know?
Nice. Another one. John Late. You know where this is going.
Oh, fucking hell, Latey.
At Level 8 Comics, he asked, have Nick and Tony fought each other with their poles in the name of Kung Fu research?
We'll often strip to the waist and wrestle. You know, that's part of the creative process.
What was it, that Oliver Reed and who else was it?
Oh, Women in Love, is it?
That's essentially, if you watch that clip of that film, that's essentially Tony and Nick's Trello.
Wasn't that movie
Two Fat Oiled Up Gentlemen?
I think if you watch that movie, sometimes it's cut, isn't it? So it sometimes it just starts with them getting naked and then just ends with then it cuts to them just both looking a bit exhausted. And I think the whole fight thing is cut out in a couple of versions. So people were sort of thinking, what's just gone on there? It's not in keeping with their characters.
Need continuity.
Yeah.
This question is obviously hilarious, but it prompted quite a quick response from Nick himself.
Yeah, did it, and from me.
He said, my pole is segmented and whips about all over the shop when I find myself pressed upon by an adversary.
True.
I think my comment was something like, this went wrong quickly.
Yeah, I knew this would get out of hand quickly. With an emoji.
Thanks, John. I love an emoji. Emoji the movie out this weekend. Very worth seeing, apparently.
Oh, fuck you.
If you get tinymail.com/cottonykungfu, there might be a review of Emoji the Movie. There isn't. I made that up. But there you go.
All right. Last question from Gareth Hopkins at GR Think. What kind of bird would be best at Kung Fu?
Oh, I think, well, didn't Tom come up with the best answer for this, didn't he? I think.
He said,
Tom Curry replied.
Surely it would be a token foo? or it could be a red wing chun. I'll stop there.
Right, I'm going to go on the record. I had this conversation with Jason yesterday that I don't think Wing Chun works. I don't think it actually works. Have you ever seen Ip Man 3 where he fights... Johnny Yen fights.
Is it when he fights Mike Tyson?
Yeah. What's that all about? He does all this stuff with his fingers, and Mike Tyson's just slamming into him with his fists. I'm thinking, I don't really understand where this is going. It looks amazing in movies. I love watching it. But I think, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Have you ever tried it? Are either of you handy with a martial art?
I did Aikido to quite a good level, and I did Judo to a brown belt. And I boxed as a teenager. There you go.
Why am I not surprised you're a brown belt?
Yeah, three fights, no losses. Yeah, 100% record boxing. There you go.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. What I boxed at York Hall when I was a teenager. If anyone who knows about boxing. No, I didn't have to. Just got to fight my fight.
What about you, Nick?
I did a bit of Aikido in my youth.
Hey.
Yeah.
We're like the Seagals of...
Yeah. more like seagulls. In all seriousness, though, The Sheep and the Wolves is cracking. So, haven't checked it out yet, folks, definitely check it out. TheSheepAndTheWolves.com, isn't it, Nick?
Yep. Yes. SheepAndTheWolves.com.
Yeah, and look for Nick at. I think your next one is. You're True Believers, aren't you, Nick? I think.
Oh,
like the True Believers summer.
Yes.
Summer variant.
Which I may be talking about in just a second.
Nice shout out. Brilliant. Mm. Yeah.
Speaking of which, do we have any shout outs?
I've got a couple.
Go for it, Danny.
Thanks to Vic Idstar Hill for sending me the first two issues of his book Unchronicled, which I've just started reading today. Sorry, it's taken me a couple of weeks, Vic. I've had a couple of busy weeks, but. Great fun, really smartly written as well. I'm really enjoying them. So watch this space for review. And also, the Beano apparently is 79 today. So there you go.
Amazing.
I would mention that. The comic that gets quoted the most is the comic people started reading, isn't it, really, in the UK? Let's face it.
It's still in print, is it?
It is. I think it is.
I know the Dandy went out of print, didn't it? And just became digital, I think. But
I know I Googled it and I went to Beano.com, whatever it's called, and... who's that Little Mix? They're on the front page, so maybe they're Beano readers.
Well, I saw on Twitter there was a promoted tweet, and it's from the Beano, and I thought, oh, what's this? Is it something about comics? And it was a video like of a guy trying to eat like a giant ice cream, and it was like, can you eat 99 flakes in 99 seconds? What the fuck has that got to do with comics?
Well, and not your bowels.
Yeah. Do you think you could do it, though?
Yeah.
You just open up your throat like a snake, wouldn't you?
Who was the bloke who played Captain Jack Harkness in Doctor Who? What was his name?
John Barrowman.
John Barrowman. I see he's in hospital having his gallbladder removed. He's just copying me, isn't he? He's realised it's fancy and, you know, trendy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's gone in to have it removed.
Well, you're making it trendy, aren't you? Hashtag gallbladder.
Yeah. Yeah, anyone with gallbladder doesn't get into the clubs I go to. Tell you now. You got to show your three holes. What?
Oh, dear God. Anyway, as we previously said just a second ago, Nick's going to be at an event coming up, which is the True Believers Comic Festival Summer Variant Edition, which is quite a cool name. It's taking place on the Sunday, 20th of August, from 11 a.m. at the Blackfriars Priory in Gloucester.
Yes.
So if you've ever been to True Believers, which I know a few of you have, it's pretty awesome.
Very good.
I've been there for the past, well, actually, I think since it started. This event is like that, but smaller and in the summer, which is ace. It brings you more of the comic-centric stuff you love, but this time in the stunning setting of a medieval priory.
Oh.
You ever been to a medieval priory? Either of you?
Not dressed. Is it like an Eyes Wide Shut kind of thing?
Oh, my God.
I thought it was going to be a 3-hour drive. If I turn up and everyone's bollock naked, it'll be blindfolded.
Worth
like, it. Oh, like, come on. Oh, that's on Thursdays. No, I assure you that this event isn't going to be like that, but there is going to be a bunch of small press creators on the day. Nick's going to be there, Andy Blore, Sarah Millman, the Etherington brothers, those cans of Red Bull. With glasses. We need to get them on, don't we? Time Bomb Comics, Beyond the Bunker, the King Legacy team, Pipe Dream Comics.
Oh, yeah. Good to see they're back, actually. I'm looking forward. Come on, boys, where's issue 2? Everyone ask them where issue 2 is. Yeah.
Also,
they're
Pipe
good
Dream
Comics. Well, really
yeah,
nice
they
guys.
Are great lads. Yeah. Yeah, really cool. Really good fun there. Pipe Dream Comics and the Psychedelic Journal are also going to be there as well. As well as all that, they're going to have tables selling back issues. There's going to be tabletop games and more. And like True Believers, they put on like panels and like workshops. There's going to be cosplay. That'd be good, wouldn't it, Tone?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I'm going.
In the email that Stuart sent me,
oh no, he's dumping me.
It said, "Sorry, Tony," after the word cosplay. I think it's amazing that you've got this reputation.
I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah. The thing is people passionate about comics, and that's all we care about, and that's what this show's
going to be. If you buy comics, go along.
Yeah, yeah. And I expect there's going to be plenty of people doing that. They're also going to have their first ever Draw Something Sunday jam piece.
Oh, yeah, he does that. That's good, isn't it? Yeah.
It's going to be open to everyone to take part and add a drawing to. And not only that, they're going to be revealing the cover art for the True Believers 2018 charity comic, which is called Tales from Beyond Infinity.
Mm. I didn't know.
There may be a Red Mask short that's going to be.
Yes. Yeah, you're on it, aren't you? That's pretty good.
Mm. I've got a True Believers jam piece story. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, yeah, go on.
Go on.
So True Believers this year, when you get the email in saying, you know, this is where you're sat on the seating plan.
Yeah.
You might have to cut this bit out because it's a meandering story, but it's just, you just remind me think of it. It's great. In the middle, you have this island where all the guests were. So you guys, John Higgins.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, Etherington Brothers. All the guests were in the middle bit, like the central kind of island, and then everyone else was all around the outs, you know, around that space.
Yeah.
And I was slap bang in the middle of the guests bit, like just random, like it's like guests, and then there's me, first time at True Believers. I'm stuck there. I've got Etherington Brothers on one side. I've got John Higgins on the other side. I'm like, what the, you know, smelling the road. You know, I've got perfect. Place, you know, I'm going to get punters all day walking past from these two. It's great. They come round with that piece of the big piece of paper, like for the jam piece for the charity auction. And so you've got like, you know, everyone who's on that in that central bit is drawing something. So John, I think he did like a Judge Dredd.
Okay.
For it, and he passes it to me, and. He's like, go on, are you going to do something? I'm like, well, I don't think... Because the bloke come out and goes, have you been told, did you get the email about the charity jam piece? You're right, drawing something for it. And everyone else has gone, yeah, no worries. John Higgins, yeah, that's cool. And I'm like, no, I didn't get that email, thinking it was going to everybody. obviously not, it's only going to the guests because they're doing it for this charity thing. So he comes around to me and he's like, you've got to draw something. And I was like, no, it's all right. You know, I'm going to pass it on. Like, no, not for me, thanks. You know. And he's like, no, you've got to do something, is it? You know, they're expecting it. So I was like, all right. So like, I might as well have just drawn my knob on it. Literally, nothing to give. So I thought, I draw like the smallest possible Jimmy from Sheep and the Wolves, you know, big quiff, you know, cheeky little smile. Stick him in the corner as quick as I, you know, and I'm shitting myself because I'm like, you know, I don't want to fuck up. You know, these guys, he's just coloured the Watchman. He sat next to me, drawn Judge Dredd, and I'm going to, like, you know, my pen's going to slap and I'm like, you know, scribble all over his. I'm just moving a bit out of the way, you know, because getting in the way of my drawing, mate. So, all right, you know, that's. So I do it and I pass it on, and sort of he just looks at me and goes, so you're done then, are you? I was like, yeah. He's like, that was quick. I was like,
yeah.
I was like,
What did you say? What did you say? I'm still waiting for issue 3 of Razor Jack. Where's that?
Should have done. Like later on, he comes around, they were doing something else, and he went, he did this, and he comes to me and goes, go on, you do this, you'll be able to knock it out in 20 seconds. I was just like, all right, mate.
I wouldn't worry about your artwork ruining that jam piece, because a couple of tables down, I was there, and I ruined it.
You did, neither of you ruined it. Fucking hell.
When you get this thing in, it's like someone's actual...
Yeah.
Yeah. But where's the white? You know, he's saying about sticking. You know, where's the white out? You know, I'm not doing anything unless I've got some Tippex next to me. No, like full goes at it.
Yeah. So the True Believers guys do a lot of stuff like that, and this show is going to be no different. Yeah. So if you want to get tickets, they're just £5 each, with children aged 12 and under getting in for free. Plus, at least £1 from every ticket sold will go to the Sue Ryder Leckhampton Court Hospice.
Oh, good guys.
Yeah, so you're helping raise some money for an awesome cause. So for tickets and more info can be found at oktruebelievers.com. And, I do have another shout-out.
Okay.
I just want to quickly shout out to everyone, and I mean everyone, who has given us a character for their awesome comics podcast, character jam piece.
I actually don't know how you fitted them all in, because we've had literally about 10 or 15 in the last 2 weeks of people going, oh, I haven't heard about this, you know.
Yeah. After a late surge.
Yeah, wasn't it?
I've had to make a little more room and more sort of rejigging, but it's I'm quite pleased with how it looks. And it looks great. Purely, I mean, I'm just literally sticking them in there and then moving them about. It looks amazing because all of the characters are brilliant and diverse. And just, yeah, we're getting some new characters that are in comics that are coming soon.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, and also, I just love seeing new characters and people's character designs. So getting those emails, it's just been fantastic.
People are well excited. It's one of our most popular posts, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Is with the poster when you stuck it up. Yeah. And I'd like to give the credit to Mr. Vanguard himself, because he came up with the idea, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did ideas, man.
Our ideas and protein shake, man. Oh, that sounds wrong. but it's going to be great. So we won't be, after this show, we won't be accepting any more. We have to have a cut off point, otherwise we'll run out of space. Because seriously, I think at the last tally, I think there might have been about 70 characters on there.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's good, isn't it?
So it will go together, and it's going to be a print that you'll be able to get at London Super Comic Con from us, an A3 print. Very limited edition, very cool, and yeah, we'll see if we can get some people to sign it if they're at the show as well. That'd
be quite nice. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah. So thank you very much to everyone that has sent us stuff, because it's just been awesome. Awesome. Right. Comics.
I think we were going to mention, because last week we had just like the best chat we've had, didn't we? It was just brilliant. And I'm really glad to see that loads of people have enjoyed it as well. But we didn't manage to fit our San Diego talk in, did we? We were going to mention a couple of stories out of San Diego.
Yeah. I mean, we say talk. Bless you. Little bit of a rant and a ramble, isn't it, really?
Yeah, we've got a couple of things we want to mention, none of which are movie related from San Diego, have we?
I do like finding out the movie news and stuff, but trying to find comic news from San Diego was a bit harder for me this
year. A bit harder this year, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's definitely becoming a show that isn't really about that, which is
a shame.
Yeah.
But it will be one day. We'll go back to it one day.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you want to discuss, Tony?
Well, I was going to just say there's a couple of things. Obviously, I'm very excited about is they announced a Master of Kung Fu 126.
Yeah.
It's especially a one-off issue, so that's very exciting. A book that we both loved, me and you, Vince, is The Vision, which won the Eisner for Best Miniseries. Tom King and Gabriel Waltz.
Yes, I think it is.
I think it's Waltz. I have to look it up. But yeah, and that is an incredible book. Really good.
I mean, Tom King is like, you know, I remember following his career when he started with his novel. A Once Crowded Sky, back when he was...
Oh,
like,
yes!
God, yeah,
about that. And he did comic conventions with that, didn't he?
Yeah, and like he was on Comic Geek Speak and stuff back in the day, and just watching this writer with a true talent just absolutely just skyrocketing.
Yeah.
You know, the work speaks for itself, because Vision's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Gabriel Walter. Apologies, Gabriel.
Yeah.
Being the artist, they both won for The Vision. And it's...
reissued that.
They've just started reissuing the first couple of issues, I think, haven't they? They've done like a...
Now that it's got an Eisner, you won't be able to miss it.
Yeah. The other one I wanted to mention was Jill Thompson, Best Graphic Album for Wonder Woman, The True Amazon. I like Jill's work, and I followed Jill. One of the few people I actually follow on Instagram is
she the creator of Scary Godmother?
Yes, that's her. And I really like her, and she did London last year, I think, or the year before. I managed to have a brief conversation with her. Mm. But particularly telling for me is because I remember her sticking up very early on in the process of this Wonder Woman book. She stuck up a few sketches, like we were talking about earlier, about, you know, trying to get into the head of the character and, you know, drawing her from all angles and, you know, character sheet stuff. And I messaged her saying how much I liked it. A couple of the images she'd done, and I referenced a couple of other artists that I thought, you know, there was a similarity to, you know, from a very sort of favourable point of view. And I had quite an interesting conversation with Jill, and now to see her win the Eisner, it sort of all brought it home. And I think she is a very talented. I mean, she did some Sandman, and she's done, you know, all kinds of different kinds of books over the years, and she's very enthusiastic about comics. And she does a lot of conventions, and she's over in the UK quite a lot, I think.
Yeah,
And it's great to see her win something really good. The other person was Tilly Walden. Sadly, didn't win for Honor Sunbeam. If you go to honorsunbeam.com as her webcomic, and it should have won.
Is that, as we all know, is that her second time being nominated for an Eisner?
I think it is. I think it might be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tilly's great. We chatted to Tilly at LCAF this year, and she's always sparky and funny and doesn't take a step back when I say stupid things, you know, as we know from...
Fair play, I normally do.
Yeah. It's just don't make eye contact. But yeah, we're big fans of Tilly. And it's great to see her come from, you know, the books that we've talked about over the last couple of years to be nominated for an Eisner. And it ain't going to be long before she wins one, let's face it. What did you want to talk about, Vince?
The one bit of news that I was quite excited about was Mark Waid and Chris Samnee. Stepping on to Captain America for the relaunch for that.
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of their Daredevil run.
Yeah, me too.
And and obviously Wade is the ultimate sort of old school comic fan, isn't he?
And I think he works best with a single... I've not been a huge fan of his Avengers run, although I read it and enjoy it. It's not quite as good as his Daredevil run, I think, put it that way.
Yeah.
But the joining of those two around that Daredevil book was fucking incredible, and Samnee is just fucking awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think he's one of the best at the moment. Without
yeah, he's up there with Darwin Cook. You know me. I genuinely think that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think, you know, who knows, in the next 10 years he'll probably do a bunch of like creator owned stuff that's just going to take over the world probably.
Yeah, and he's another guy that I used to hear on like Brown Comics. Sorry, mate, go on.
It's like because they run on Black Widow.
Is Wade writing Black Widow as well, is he? I can't remember.
Is he not?
I haven't read it, so I keep meaning to buy it and trade. It's one of those books where I missed the first issue and then I thought, right, I'll buy it and trade, and I haven't got around to it.
They've moved on to that, and on that, I think particularly on Black Widow, somebody does more. It's more of a kind of back and forth between the two of them in terms of
I
tell you what I'd love to see is, like, you know how Marvel, they have their events, which normally they'll have like one main artist, won't they, for an event. I'd love to see an event where Chris Samnee does all of it. I think that'd be fascinating. I will say that Tony and Dan have had to listen to me rant for the past couple of months. I am unashamedly loving Secret Empire.
Yeah, well, we both are, mate. All three of us are loving it, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely loving it. I know some people.
It's one of those books we read. It's the only book, single issue that I buy on Comixology, because I know that the three of us are going to talk about it.
Yeah.
But you download it on the day, am I right in saying that?
Yeah. As soon as it's there, it's like, well, I'm getting this then. And, I didn't read the first couple of issues, so I jumped into it a bit later, and I immediately picked it, I could get into it. It's just, I'm not wanting to, look, Cap's going to go back to being Captain America. I'm not going to bloody lose my rag over it. This is a story, after all.
I think we all know that'll happen, don't we?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, some people don't, Tony,
Yeah, I know.
But I have had some issues with some of the artwork. I will just say that. There is a lot of it that's absolutely amazing. It's astonishing.
But there's a couple of pages where I've had to go, who's that again? Couple of moments like that. But on the whole, I think we both agree that the writing is Bynum Spencer is so on point, isn't it?
Yeah. The artist that I don't like that does it, I rarely just think, this is not working for me at all. But the writing sort of sings above that.
Yeah.
So the art doesn't take me out of it too much, and it's just so good. I'm just enjoying it, which I didn't. Yeah. I honestly didn't think I would. Do you know what I mean? Because when you hear so much, there's so much bluster and hot air that goes on social media. I was fully expecting to read the issue and just be like, "What's all the fuss about?" But I read it and thought, I really like this. This is.
I actually think it's an event where something. There's no. I mean, there's a little bit of padding on it. We'll all admit there's a little bit of padding. But there is things that happen, and you think, I'm only on issue 7, and that's just happened. Mm. Where is this going to go now? Because for people who haven't read it, there's this long heralded event. There's this sort of moment that is prophesied that happens, and that has just taken place in issue 7. Now, I just presumed that would take place in the last issue, but it hasn't. We're 3 away yet, aren't we? I think it's a 10-issue miniseries, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think so.
It's coming up quite regular. Yeah,
yeah, so, and so the Morales Spider-Man really comes into his own in it. I'm really enjoying it. Really good,
just great stuff. Speaking about more great comics, we've got a couple of recommendations before we let you all go.
Yes,
Tony, do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll go. Let me just find mine. Sorry, dude. I'm gonna talk about. I know we've talked about it before, but we talked about this when it was a webcomic because we had the creator on, who's a big friend of ours now, and I'm absolute a total fan of this lady, and it's Susie Gander and her book Periwinkle. I suggest probably go back and listen to the episode, and you'll get a wealth and a much better talked about version of it than I could possibly do. But it's written art and story by Susie Gander, lettering and logo by Robin Jones, also a friend of ours and has appeared on one of our early shows, actually. And Susie sums it up as this: Periwinkle is your own personal story, fearless, cancer-killing superhero. And let's face it, not too bad on the eyes either. It's appeared as a webcomic and has been a webcomic for a couple of years. And then Susie kickstarted it, as I understand, and decided to... And it, like the OCD that is all comic creators, she decided to redraw it, didn't she, I think?
Yeah.
Really successfully, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But it starts with the central character in a hospital with her husband, aside, and she's about to be diagnosed with cancer when this character Periwinkle appears, and believing it to be a sort of medicine induced hallucination, she just gets on with her life. Now Susie has been through cancer, and I think it's very plain from the book, and she does talk about it quite openly on our show as well. And what she does is she uses a superhero framework, a kind of, to talk about fighting cancer, I think it's fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
But she does it. I mean, I'm a grumpy 40 something. Do you know what I mean? But this story absolutely broke me. It's so full of emotion, but so full of sort of bravery and hope and stuff like that as well. But there are moments in it. There's a moment where Susie sort of crawled up and curled up in a ball, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And she sort of, I just lay there, vulnerable and broken, is the line. I thought, oh my God, this is, it's such an incredibly strong book written. And I don't think Susie's done much comics before that. I know she did a bit with Dan, didn't she?
Mm.
But this to come out and just like go, right, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this comic about my illness. I'm going to turn it into this sort of story about hope. It was just incredibly inspirational. It's being kickstarted. This is just purely a preview because I don't want to give too much away. But because I know if you go to the webcomic, it doesn't finish on the webcomic. To finally finish it, you have to go and buy a copy. And I know it's getting released at Nottingham. Yeah. And I've been talking to Susie about the timings of doing sort of previews and reviews. And I think it's something that people should pay attention to, I think, who are listening. If you've got a comic coming out, speak to the reviewer about, or us, you know, or podcasts, or, you know, whoever it's going to be, about what is going to be the best time to release a preview, which is like a taster of the story, and a review, which is an examination of the story. You know, I would say a review should come out after or on the day of the book being released. I think that's fair, but I think it's fair to put a preview out. I'm going to say no more than 2 weeks before the release. I think if you're sticking a preview out of a book that's more than 2 weeks before the release of it, you're not going to help sales because people are going to forget about it.
Yeah.
Or people are going to look to go and buy it. And it's not going to be available, and they're just going to not bother, you know. So I think the timing's really important. Is that something you two guys have come across before with your books, or thought about? Or?
It's hard to really say because sometimes you put them out there, and the reviews take a long time to come in. Sometimes,
yeah,
because also I do understand that reviewers get a lot. I mean, we get quite a few sent through to this show, and we can't cover them all. Yeah, so I mean, I've never really thought about timings so much. I really should. Yeah. There's so much more I should think about. But that's why we started the show, so I could just bleed everyone dry.
Yeah. What do you think about it, Nick? Have you come across this yet?
Yeah, I've had
the print copies. You know.
I've had pre. I think what I've tended to find is, I think like Vince says, you know, the reviews. It's not like, you know. When the next Harry Potter book drops, you know, someone's staying up all night to read it to get the review out the next morning.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get a review when, you know, you get to the top of that slush pile sort of thing, you know, on that reviewer's desk, you know, whenever that might happen. But I think what I've found is some websites will run a preview almost, you know, and then they've ultimately, you know, never reviewed the book. But, I've got the preview out on there. And that, you know, and I think that's because, A, it's easy copy for them. You know, it's content.
Yeah, especially if you're sending quite a lengthy press release out.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll send out an email, you know, I'll have a little press release. I've got a little press kit online that I can point people to with images and text, you know, some synopsis and whatnot, and you know, some high res files if they want to use them and stuff. And you know, you make life easy for the reviewer, you know, or you know, the editor of the site. They're going to run, you know, even if it is, you know, literally a, you know, just, you know,
cut and paste thing. Yeah,
this is the thing. Yeah, cut and paste from the link to the, you know, the website or whatever, then, you know, it's job done, isn't it? You know, you've got the eyeballs. And
because that sort of release blast or that preview blast or review blast only lasts so long on Twitter and Facebook, doesn't it? It's gone in a blink, isn't it? I think you have to time it, especially if it's something you're going to click and buy online, or maybe the day, you know, the couple of days before Thought Bubble. We laugh that we get a lot of preview comics sent through in the week before Thought Bubble, and it's difficult to cover them all, you know. And I have to sort of set aside a day where I can just type stuff out for people, you know. I want to promote their book before Thought Bubble, sort of thing. But yeah, just as a little aside there, guys, I just thought it's worth remembering, if you've got a book coming out, and we've got London coming up, and then you've got Thought Bubble after that, you know, and you've got the Lakes and Nottingham, and you know, if you're going to release a book at these conventions, then have a think about when you're sending your book out. You know, I've got a book today from Ken, and I emailed him back and said, what do you think about, you know, when is it going to be ready to review? Obviously, Ken and I have worked on projects together, and I actually think his book is just really good. And so I want to help in getting as many eyes and getting as many sales as possible for him. So I had that conversation with him. But I think just think about the timing, just as a little aside there. So anyway, go back to the book. Talking about the art on Susie's book, I have to say... the art was never bad in the webcomic, and it was, you know, I enjoyed reading it, and it flowed well. But she's really stepped up with the art on the collected edition. She draws some good looking women, I'll tell you now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. It's from a sort of purely male chauvinistic point of view, she does. Do you know what I mean? She ain't wrong when she says Periwinkle is not, you know, is not bad on the eyes, because she ain't. And she does some great fight scenes as well. I have to say that there's a fight that goes on inside her body, basically, with the superhero sort of fighting the illness. And really well done. So she, I have to say, she's really grown. She's really, really grown as an artist. If you want to get a copy or have a look at some of the art and ready to buy a copy when it's released next month, I think, go to periwinklecomic.com. If you want to follow Periwinkle on Twitter, go to at Susie, S-U-S-I-E, Gander, G-A-N-D-E-R. And also, do everyone a favour. I don't think there's anyone in this country that cancer hasn't touched in some way or other. Go to www.bloodwise.org.uk, UK's leading blood cancer research charity, and drop them a few quid as well. And I know that money goes from the purchase of this comic directly to that charity.
Yeah, she's got it written on her banner, if I believe correctly.
Yes, she has.
Is it 20%? I don't want to quote that. I think it might be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so brilliant comic, all for a good cause. Yeah.
I'm very excited about this, with the release of this, and I think everyone will be surprised. It's a worthy, you know, sometimes you see like sort of charity comics, you think, you know, but this is this. It's a cracking story as well, you know, really well written.
I think that the most important word about it is hope. Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
because it's a superhero story as well, and
And that's why she's so clever. She's crafted it like that, you know.
Yeah, and hope is always a massive part of any superhero story, and I think it just works brilliantly. So.
Yeah, very good. There you go.
Touché.
Get that.
Touché. Cool. My recommendation is completely on the other end of the scale.
It's not another erotic comic, is it?
There we go. Always. No, it's another horror comic.
Okay.
It's one from Dark Horse. It's been on my wish list for a little while. I normally say this. It's been on my wish list, and I pick it up, and I loved it.
This is by
Cullen Bunn and Tyler Crook. And this is Harrow County.
Oh, I want to read this.
Volume 1, Countless Haints. This has been on the wish list for a long time. And I'll hold my hands up. I don't read it monthly. You know, I'm going to get the trades. I got halfway through the first issue of this collection, and I ordered the next two books.
Oh, nice. Good.
The synopsis is basically this. Young Emmy always knew that the woods surrounding her home crawled with ghosts and monsters, the countless haints of Harrow County. But on the eve of her 18th birthday, she learns that she is connected to these creatures and to the land itself in ways she never could have imagined. I tell you what, it took my breath away, actually, how good this was. And there's a quote, pull quote, on the front. From Mike Mignola.
Oh, right, nice.
I don't think many people know about him, do they?
He reviews any old book.
But he said something that I think was absolutely spot on. A rare thing, both wonderfully charming and genuinely disturbing.
Nice.
And it is. It does have
what
this
people
sort
say
of,
about you.
Yeah. Very, very, very true. But it does, I mean... Anyone who listens knows that I'm a big fan of Cullen Bunn's The Sixth Gun.
Yes.
The man can write really poetic, old-school sort of horror.
Plus, he does everything. He does, like, great superhero books. Yeah. He does all kinds of stuff. I think he's great, yeah.
Yeah.
So and quite self-effacing. He's not one of these guys who's always in your face.
No,
you know?
No. He's just churning out quality content. And this is just this is a series from Dark Horse. This just going. It's going at a nice pace. You know, I hope it's selling well. It's a fantastic story. It's like a TV show, the most amazing TV show that you'll never see. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's very creepy. I mean, obviously the synopsis doesn't do it justice. I don't want to spoil anything about this because I sort of stayed away from spoilers. You know, I thought the cover had me, and I think it's got a lot of people because the cover is sort of, it's a drawer that's sort of pulled out, which has like human skin. Sort of seemingly crawling out of it, and like,
okay,
and that's a part of it. There is a character that is a skinless boy,
right?
And yeah, there's loads of weird, otherworldly, sort of monstrous creatures. There's ghost witches, monstrous trees, but it seems to be set in a sort of like Prohibition sort of. It's got that sort of style and feel to it.
Oh, I was wondering about the age of it. Yeah, is it sort of 20s, backwards America, is it?
Yeah,
type
it
thing,
seems
or?
To be that. Yeah. And I know we talk about Cullen Bunn, but the MVP of this book is Tyler Crook. I've never seen what he's done before.
Yeah, he's great, isn't
he? Yeah. But he does the art and the letters for this, so it's literally those two that are doing the whole book. And it's just ridiculous. It's absolutely stunning what he does here. I mean, there's water, you know, there's watercolors going on. You know, it almost, some of it sort of reminded me of Dave Wachter's sort of approach.
Okay.
Yeah, which makes the horror all the more sort of like suburban gothic. You know, it's got that real sort of American gothic kind of feel to it. There's flame creatures. There's, oh, it's just wonderful stuff. And like I say, that skinless boy is just really weird and terrifying. But also the characters are oddly charming as well. It's a great balance. You know, it's a wonderful balance, which is quite hard to do.
If you go to Mr. Tyler Crook, which is his Twitter, there's a pinned tweet actually. If I'm just looking at it now, of him doing a drawing, like a commission. And gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, it's
brilliant.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And another thing that got me, at the beginning of every issue, it says the title Harrow County, and it's always on like a double page spread, and he works the words Harrow County into the artwork. Like one of them is like a gravestone, and one of them there's like all these trees, and you have to look for it, but you suddenly see some of the branches are sort of angled, so it spells Harrow County. Or I think the first one, if I look here, I've got it right in front of me. There's sort of a cloudy sort of day. Yeah, there's like a menacing tree, and in the background there's a farmhouse, and there's sort of like these dark clouds sort of emanating from behind the farmhouse, and that spells Harrow County. It's just that sort of work with fonts and stuff will get me every time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love it. Love it. So volume one is Countless Haints, which you can pick up Comixology, Amazon, wherever, your comic book shop. I think they're on like volume four at the moment.
Okay.
It's four. Yeah, so I'm thoroughly looking forward to reading through these because
it's an often talked about and recommended book, I think, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
I
posted a picture of me holding the book, and so many people sort of said, yes, that's an amazing series. Dark Horse put out a good quality graphic novel, even though it's just a trade paperback that I got, because it's got loads of sketches and work in progress and pin-ups in the back as well. So,
yep,
cool. Well worth your money. Nick, what would you like to recommend?
I'd like to plug a mate, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Of course you can.
So, Owen Sherwood is an illustrator, and he's done a lot of editorial illustration. You find his Instagram, Owen Sherwood Illustrator, and he's just started a sequential narrative, a graphic novel. I don't know, yeah, you call it a graphic novel, but you know, he's putting it out as single issues, little self-published mini comics. It's called The Incredible Plight of Tony Fevenick.
Oh yes, I read this. It's great. Yeah, really good.
It's a prologue, really. And basically, I'm just giving everyone a heads up, because as soon as sort of Owen kind of gets a few more sort of eyes on his work, he's going to kind of blow up because he's just amazing. Just think, as an artist, as a sort of storyteller, it's an almost silent first issue, this prologue. Sort of jam-packed with character, and the artwork is really expressive. This kind of brush pen, sort of pen and ink style that he uses, is just sort of phenomenal. But essentially, it's imagine a guy wakes up, sort of bollock naked on a desert island, completely, and no idea how he's got there. Sort of all around him on the beach is kind of littered, like a plane crash or a shipwreck of a huge sort of freighter, and a kind of all this cargo has just been spilled out all over the beach. And he sort of wakes up by this stream, a little bit kind of in, you know, to the little sort of foresty sort of bit down by the sort of seafront. In no idea where he is, how he's got there. Don't know where his clothes are, and you know, it's essentially his first issues. It's all just 20 pages of him, kind of like, you know, trying to work out what's going on, and you know, it's sort of spoilers, but you know, it's in the sort of title. You know, which is a glimpse of his reflection at the end, and if sort of not knowing where your clothes are. You know, when you wake up, it's sort of bad enough. He's got a head he's got a head of a bird, and he's just like, you know, WTF, as the kids say. And, you know, as I say, you know, this first issue, it's a prologue. It just sort of sets a scene, sort of introduces you to this kind of character. It's just more about kind of evoking a sort of mood but it's kind of, you know, by turns, funny, kind of intriguing, slightly kind of off kilter. You know, is it a kind of magic realist sort of tale? Is it a sort of body horror? You don't really know where it could be going any direction.
Yeah,
and like I say, I just think, you know, I mean, if you have a look at his website, you know, you might recognise some of his illustration. You know, he's been, you know, he's had stuff in The Guardian and all over this, you know, New Yorker magazine, I think. And
has he? Oh, brilliant.
He's a New Yorker by sort of birth, you know, so he's, you know, he's kind of been about, and you might recognise, you know, I had a sort of, you know, when you sort of see someone's stuff, you think, am I seeing your stuff actually in actual magazines? And they're kind of like, yeah, you might have done. But like I say, you know, if you want to sort of get on to, you know, sort of next big, you know, someone that's going to, well, you know, I don't know, you know, touch wood, you know, he deserves to blow up, because, you know, I think, you know, stuff that he's doing is great.
I've just ordered it. It looks great.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And if you go to his site, there's some amazing prints as well. I've just sent one through to you guys. Yeah,
it's just very funny. You know, his stuff, you know, full disclosure, you know, we tabled together. We did Stoke-on-Trent together. And, you know, he does these great little sketches, kind of, you know, very funny stuff, you know, sort of kind of, sort of, he's got, you know, sort of, he's done a little sort of Adam West and with a big silly bomb. And, you know, he does, if you look at his Instagram, loads of process. So he's sort of, he's working away on issue sort of one. This, if you think Incredible Plight of Tony Feverneck is sort of issue zero, he's working away on the sort of first sort of big chunk of story. And I kind of know, I get to sort of see pages, and I sort of know where the story's going and stuff, and it's just great. You know, I just absolutely, you know, if you kind of like, you know, if you like sort of genre comics but with a real kind of you know, sort of art house kind of vibe to them, in terms of the aesthetic, then, you know, you could do a lot worse than getting onto owensherwood.com. And
awesome.
It's only three, I think the issue zero is only £3.
Yeah, that's good value. Yeah. Hey, it's a nice little little glimpse as to, you know, stuff that's going to come.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it's always good to have a new name to pimp out.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So, we hope you enjoyed this episode, folks. It's been a cracker one. It's been
jam-packed
with info, and no doubt outtakes if I can edit them in time.
we would have started about 10 minutes earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Now, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. Let us know what you thought. There's several different ways you can do it. You can
Are you going to segue now?
Yeah, he's doing it. He's in the middle of it.
Are you all right? Sorry.
Watch yourself. Right. If any of you people out there want to interrupt me in any way, there's several different ways you can do it.
You're such a pro. I say that, I'm a prostitute.
you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Or likewise, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. If you've got any new issues or anything you want to shout about, Thought Bubble is in the future, so I know there's a few that may be coming our way. So, and thank you very much to anyone that sends us anything. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where you can get the latest important polls like Keyshaw Flan and important stuff like that. Like us on Facebook.
Listen, everyone's going to vote for Keith just because they hate me. It's got nothing to do with the actual morality.
No, they're going to vote for it because it's fact, Tony.
All right, go on a march or something. What about Keith's? Why don't you?
Give Keith
a
chance.
Civil rights movement, Keith man. But I just think this is some kind of bullying technique.
No. I'm sure there are other ways to bully you, Tony. Come on.
Yes. And if you want to bully Tony, why not go to... Here we go.
Yeah, you can go to facebook.com/awesomevoicepodcast. or join what has essentially become just a sounding board for all types of comics people who love comics. And that's the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk. I don't even do Facebook, but I like reading that group.
Brilliant.
It's amazing.
Some great opinions. Simon Russell's put a really good post up, and it's getting people are writing essays, which I'm really enjoying reading.
Yeah. It's great stuff. So check out that. Thank you for listening. Whether it was on the website, awesomecomicsbot.bot. That's been a long night, folks. Awesome. You have no idea. Thank you for listening. Whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please, please, please leave us a review. It will help get the word out. We want more people listening to this show so they can discover the comics like we do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and likewise, if you listen to us on the Stitcher, the Podnose, or the Podknife Network, we have been added to another.
Oh, yeah.
I swear you make those up.
If I start going, if I just use body parts, like the pod elbow.
Pod ass.
The pod bum. No, it'd be pod bum. Come on. Pod boo.
Pod ball.
Probably like pod nuts, surely. But thank you for listening to us wherever it was. Now, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter, or neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk, and there's something going up this week at Down the Tubes as well. There you go.
Amazing. You can follow me at Jester Diablo and find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. And Nick, thank you for joining us this week. It's been brilliant. Where can people find you?
I'm Nick Prolix on Twitter or on Instagram, and my website, thesheepandthewolves.com.
There you go. So much awesome.
Highly recommended. Yeah, and you're killing it on the Instagram as well, dude, at the moment. You're putting up some great process stuff for the... Am I allowed to say it's for the Nottingham charity comic? Are we allowed to say that yet?
Yeah, I asked Kev Brett. He said, yep. He said, absolutely, yeah we can. Yeah.
Yeah, we're both in that, actually. I'm doing something with Kev for that. So
here we go. Why don't you all just get a room? Jesus. it's been an all-round love fest this week, folks, and we hope you enjoyed it. So enjoy the rest of your week. Read loads of comics. Let us know what you thought, as always. And stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
Cheers.
See the brilliant video I just posted on Facebook. Fucking genius.
How often do I go on Facebook? Hang on. Have you just posted it?
About 10 minutes ago. Oh, and God. I put the thing on it. That's my mum. It's not actually my mum. I just put it on there because it's funny. It's making me laugh.
Grr. What the fuck?
I'm just Can we have that as the outro music this week, please?
What? Why have you... I mean... Sort your fucking life out, mate.
Fucking genius. I had a phone call the other day from someone, and he said, "Hello, is that Mrs. Esmond?" I said, "Of course it's not fucking Mrs. Esmond. It's a bloke, you..."
To to be fair, Tony, you have a ladylike voice.
Yeah, the ladies love my voice.
Who told you that?
Got a face for phone sex.
I get quite a few ladies off just by being on this podcast. I can tell you that now.
What, get them off what? Their food?
I'll put them off their dinner. Let's do a video show.
It looks like a penis, only smaller.
Yeah. Go on, touch it. Move your hand up and down just a little bit.
Looks like a pistachio nut in a dirty bird's nest.
Yeah. I'm so old, it's like having a bag of pennies hanging behind it.
Right. Right, come on. Hello.
All right, I did that one.
Okay.
Couldn't help myself.